So we're almost there. Christmas Day, two sleeps to go. There's that kind of half groan from people, half kind of... one or two now thinking I was quite excited, but I'm not sure I can really show that. Now the children have gone out, because obviously it's the children, the young ones, who get excited. Once you hit a certain age, apparently, you're meant to be more responsible and stuff. So obviously not 36, maybe 37, I can't comment. Goes without saying, though, that this time of year will evoke for people, and I'm sure if we went around today, a whole variety of different emotions. There'll be some of us, maybe some even in here, not just the little ones, who will be up at the crack of dawn on Christmas Day. Because there is that sense still within you of the excitement that it brings, and the joy. And however old you may be, you still get that sense in your stomach on a Christmas Day morning of, oh, it's Christmas Day, wow. You can join us at 10 a.m. on Christmas Day. We're going to do our annual Who Was Up the Earliest poll, to see who did really kind of not get any sleep. Others, though, you might be, and you might be in that stage, of actually you're feeling a bit worn down and a bit fed up, really, with this whole countdown to Christmas thing. Kind of starts back in, what, August or June or May or probably last year. And actually, in all honesty, you're at that point where you've just had enough. And it's just crowded in, and you're almost looking forward to it all being over, irrelevant of the significance that Christmas has. But actually, it's just too much, and you just want life to go back to normal and the day in, day out, to resume again. Now, maybe some of us, I know there are some, who actually, this time of year is actually really difficult. And actually, it's a time that brings back memories of loved ones who are no longer here. And actually, it's maybe because of this time of year, particularly when they departed, but it may be just when families gather and all that sort of thing. And actually, it's a really tough time. And it's one of those situations where we kind of get swept up in everything, but really deep down, we're not looking forward to it. Maybe the last few weeks, actually, have been really tough. A friend of mine, randomly, it's another story for another time, randomly came and visited from Liverpool on Friday night and stayed the night. But he buried his father on Thursday, who died just over a week ago. And as a vicar, he is now in the throes of, I think, 12 services he's attending and involved in over the next few days. But for him, actually, it's a time of year that's just, wow, the last week has really taken it out of him. And maybe there's some of us here who actually, we're not really in this moment at all. And there may be other feelings that we might connect with, other thoughts that might come to mind. Obviously, this year we're in that kind of flow where we've got today, and then obviously Monday's Christmas Eve, and then obviously Christmas Day, and it's kind of consecutively flowing through. And over the last 2 weeks, we've explored the accounts from Luke chapter 1. Spoiler alert, a baby's going to be born come chapter 2, just in case you didn't know that. But we've looked at the build-up to the birth of Jesus. It's a sad reality, though, that for many, the birth of Jesus is not a spoiler. For many, the birth of Jesus is something they have no knowledge about at all. I came across this tweet this week from Gavin Calver. He's the Evangelical Alliance's director for Mission England, and he said, "Big reality check about the spiritual state of the nation at my son's primary school carol service. Virtually all the parents knew none of the carols or the Christmas story. Church, we've got a big job to do in reaching the UK with the gospel." And sadly, he's right. For many, the Christian Christmas story is just something they kind of have no understanding or knowledge of at all. Some of you will know, about 10 days ago, we had 60 8 and 9-year-olds come to the church here, year 4 from Ballylankton, and we went on a journey to the centre of the Christmas pudding. It was an hour and a half of kind of chaos and fun, but exploring the Christmas story and actually reading the accounts from the Bible, and asking questions, what does it mean for them? And it's a resource that I actually wrote 10 years ago when I was, we were as a family in Bexhill at Beulah. And I can remember 10 years ago being genuinely gobsmacked as I read the stories, doing it with children in the schools at that time, the number of them who didn't know the Christmas story. And I kind of, as I was reading it, there's part of me that almost thought, where's the excitement in this? Because they know what I'm going to say. They know what's coming next. They know who visits Jesus. They know the shepherds and the wise men and all these different bits and pieces. But actually, many of them didn't. And I don't want to be someone who was classed as cynical, but I have to agree with Gavin Calver in that sadly, I don't believe it's got any better. And actually, there are many in this community today who probably have very little knowledge of the Christian Christmas story. We might think they will. We might think, well, because there's four churches in Battle, that's pretty good, really. And they'd have seen things out and about. And obviously, you know, we're doing different bits and pieces. But actually, for many, it's just a time for fun and excitement and excess and all those sorts of things. So we come to the penultimate part of Luke chapter 1. And what excites me and really grabs me about this passage is that within the passage, which I'm going to read in a moment, without a doubt, God's power is at work. It's not just some story that is just kind of, you know, made up, a fairy tale or whatever, but no, we see here the power of God at work. And we actually, what kind of really grabs me as well is, as I'm going to explore, we actually see God kind of multitasking, if you will, in this passage. Obviously, God multitasking is like kind of run of the mill, because God's, well, it's beyond him. But we see him actually, on the one hand, it's about the birth of Jesus being foretold, and obviously all that we celebrate at Christmas. But actually, within it, the ministry and the mission of Jesus, the very purpose that he came to earth to fulfill, is woven through these verses. And Jesus is not even born yet. And I'm sure you'd be the first probably to tell me that actually we look back in the Old Testament and this has been happening for years, for centuries. This build-up to what is coming. And there's just no getting away from the reason God sent his son to earth. I'm going to read from Luke chapter 1, verse 57 to the end. When it was time for Elizabeth to have her baby, she gave birth to a son. Her neighbours and relatives heard that the Lord had shown her great mercy, and they shared her joy. On the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, and they were going to name him after his father, Zechariah. But his mother spoke up and said, "No, he is to be called John." They said to her, "There is no one among your relatives who has that name." Then they made signs to his father to find out what he would like to name the child. He asked for a writing tablet, and to everyone's astonishment, he wrote, "His name is John." Immediately his mouth was opened and the tongue set free, and he began to speak, praising God. All the neighbors were filled with awe, and throughout the hill country of Judea, people were talking about all these things. Everyone who heard this wondered about it, asking, "What then is this child going to be?" For the Lord's hand was with him. His father Zechariah was filled with the Holy Spirit and prophesied, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, because he has come to his people and redeemed them. He has raised up a horn of salvation for us in the house of his servant David, as he said through his holy prophets of long ago. Salvation from our enemies and from the hand of all who hate us, to show mercy to our ancestors and to remember his holy covenant, the oath he swore to our father Abraham, to rescue us from the hand of our enemies and to enable us to serve him without fear, in holiness and righteousness before him all our days. And you, my child, will be called a prophet of the Most High, for you will go on before the Lord to prepare the way for him, to give his people the knowledge of salvation through the forgiveness of their sins, because of the tender mercy of our God, by which the rising sun will come to us from heaven, to shine on those living in darkness and in the shadow of death, to guide our feet into the path of peace." And the child grew and became strong in spirit, and he lived in the wilderness until he appeared publicly to Israel. Don't know if you've ever come across the term photobombing. Or you may have obviously seen images that describe and show what this is. Photobombing is the whole idea of if you're taking a picture or someone is taking a picture and someone kind of, you know, steps in and kind of takes over from the main focus in the picture. I came across this example of someone proposing. I mean, they've done it at kind of, you know, Disney park and everything. That's brilliant. But obviously this gentleman in the front just happened to run across. And so kind of spoiled that moment. Humans aren't the only ones who do it. Animals get in there. Again, not quite what they'd had in mind. You might see other kind of celebrities. This is the band U2 with Benedict Cumberbatch of Sherlock fame at the Oscars. Kind of stepping in there, look quite serious, and he doesn't quite capture it. But it's not just celebrities who do this. The Queen, you may be aware, has come to know this. And this is one of a number of photos that she has this in the background, this wry smile as people are taking pictures. Prince Harry has kind of followed in her footsteps as well. And even our very own Charles Dunn, if we could have the next slide, please. At our Chris Stingle service a few weeks ago, decided that he just needed to really add himself to that. I reference that because some may read the passage that I've just read to you about the birth of John the Baptist and Zechariah's song, and they might kind of think, well, it's something similar to that, really. Because is it really meant to be here? Does it really fit in with the flow of things? I mean, if we were to do a poll of, you know, list the characters of the nativity story, and even if we were to do it here, ask, you know, Christians, kind of, you know, who are the characters in the Christmas nativity story? I'm pretty sure John the Baptist wouldn't be top of the list. And I'm almost going to kind of step out and say, I'm actually imagining that many of us wouldn't even reference John the Baptist. When you think of the nativity story, you think of what we celebrate at Christmas. I've certainly never come across a Christmas card with John the Baptist on it and this scene being portrayed. Yet Luke takes time to recount both the birth of John the Baptist but also his father's song. And in a place that potentially some might say doesn't really fit, he does it with this wonderful narrative, taking almost more time to talk about the kind of the foretelling of John the Baptist and then the birth of John the Baptist than actually about Jesus, if you count up the verses in terms of the first couple of chapters of Luke. But he does it in this way with this kind of picturesque, you get this sense of this community, that were obviously close-knit by the very nature of verse 57. When it was time for Elizabeth to have her baby, she gave birth to a son. Her neighbours and relatives heard that the Lord had shown a great mercy and they showed her joy. This sense of togetherness and just this kind of picture postcard image, if you will. We see the miraculous, powerful hand of God at work in terms of Zechariah having been made mute in chapter 1, here being able to speak again. And some would actually suggest that actually he was potentially maybe deaf and mute during the pregnancy. The same word is used as in Luke 7, 22. But whatever, we see this powerful demonstration of God at work in someone not being able to speak for 9 months and then suddenly being able to speak. We might kind of, you know, sometimes lose our voice for a little bit, but this was something else entirely. And so there could be that argument saying, well, how does it actually fit in with all that we're celebrating? If you come this afternoon to the family carol service and you know, the different elements that we draw in to, we read about in the Bible, this is not, as I say, classically one of them. One other example, we went to the Key Stage 1 performance of Battle of Langton, so the infants, the other week. And along with different things they did, they actually read out the story we read in the Bible in terms of the Christmas story. But again, John the Baptist wasn't there. You might get the point that I'm kind of making here. And as I've reflected on this and been looking at this passage and what it may say to us today, in part I actually came to the conclusion that maybe it's exactly like Star Wars. Bear with me here. 28 years after the original trilogy was concluded back in 1983, where you had A New Hope, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi, in 2015, Episode 7, The Force Awakens, appeared. Okay, so 28 years, we're not going to talk about the prequels. 28 years later, The Force Awakens came out in cinemas. And the original actors, Mark Hamill Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher all reprised their roles, and it was obviously a massive success. The juggernaut continued. And so in 2017, Episode 8, The Last Jedi, came out. Okay, you with me so far? Brilliant. All right. Now, in between the release of these two films, Carrie Fisher, who famously played Princess Leia, passed away on the 27th of December 2016. And so the expectation between the release of these two films was actually, well, they're going to re-edit it. They're going to change it so that kind of she can kind of bow out, her character can, in the second of the two films. But what actually happened was when the film was released, The Last Jedi, even though there was an opportunity within the story for her character to kind of be seemingly done away with, she makes it through to the end credits. And imagine I'd sat there, and there are many others who may have sat there and gone, hold a second, what's that all about? Because how are they going to film any more? They made a big statement saying we're not going to use computers or CGI or that sort of thing. How are they going to carry this story forward? And actually, what it supposedly they've suggested is actually there was footage that was shot that is going to be used in the film that comes out next year, Episode 9, for those who are waiting. And they're going to use that previous footage in a later film. And I suppose as I reflected on this, 4 years after her death, she's going to appear on screen once again. We come back to the passage. And in part, I think that's what Luke is doing here. Why it may not necessarily fit with our classic narrative of the Christmas story that we tell. Yes, Luke is recording something that can seem out of place. But actually, the power of what he's recording here is going to have an impact in the years to come. And John is going to make a reappearance, as is prophesied by his father, that is beyond anything that those villagers or townsfolk would have thought or imagined when they heard about the news of the birth of this baby. The part he's going to play, and the way that it's going to be foundational in terms of Jesus' ministry, is something that I don't think we can sometimes grasp, and maybe sometimes actually we kind of completely miss. I mean, this time of year, I was seeing the adverts for different TV shows that are coming out, and whether you're kind of looking out for the new version of Les Miserables that the BBC have done, or maybe Watership Down and seeing if the bunnies survive this time. There's always that sense of this is kind of what's coming next when they do these serials. I think Les Miserables in three parts this year. And I imagine at the end of the first episode, there's going to be this section of saying, next time, this is, what's coming, And they do this more and more these days, trying to keep you engaged, keep you paying attention. And this sense of what's coming up is written all over what Luke is writing here. The fact that, Jesus is the Messiah. There's no doubt about that. There's no question when you read what Luke is writing. But yet John came in the spirit and the power of Elijah to prepare the way. And his role, therefore, has a key part to play within this. Yes, everything is focusing on the Messiah, but we mustn't miss what John is doing within this. And so when Zechariah brings his song, the Benedictus, as it's apparently called, due to the first word in Latin, which I'm assuming is right. I don't know Latin, so I can't completely comment there. But he sings this song, and if you kind of break it down into two halves, initially he's talking and basically just praising God for what he's done, raising a horn of salvation, it talks about, for the messianic deliverer, this clear declaration of God's purposes that are being unfurled around them. Remembering the fact that for some 400 years, God's voice has been silent. We flick over from the end of the Old Testament straight into the New Testament in the blink of an eye or a turn of a page. Maybe it's even on the same, two pages if you've got a Bible set out like that. But actually, for God's people, this was awesome. This was magnificent. Because God had been seemingly silent in terms of speaking into what he was going to do and what was coming. Obviously, masses had been foretold throughout the time we read about in the Old Testament. But it had come to that point where there'd been nothing. And so suddenly, there's this sense of God is on the move. And Zechariah just can't help but burst forth, if you will, sharing this fulfillment of what is happening. But then he goes on in the second part from verse 76 and following, and kind of clarifies the role that, that John will have. The fact that his significant role is one to prepare the way, proclaiming the Messiah. And that from the very beginning, Jesus, kind of his roadmap, if you will, is set out before him. It's so easy to kind of look at some of these passages in the beginning of Luke and kind of go, well, do they really fit here? You know, could they just go in some kind of appendix along the way or whatever? But actually, no. They're essential because they, from the very beginning, from the off, they are reminding readers of why Jesus is coming, why his birth is so important, why we need to be, should be, excited about Christmas. Whatever's going on around us, within that, there should be that moment where we go, wow, God loves me so much that he sent his only son. That is what Christmas is about. It's his sense from the very beginning that was at the heart of what Jesus was coming to do. And in the midst of this passage, we see various relationships being played out, which again I think can really speak in to where we find ourselves maybe this time of year. You got Zechariah and Elizabeth. I mean, their 9 months would have been quite interesting. Maybe Elizabeth would have been glad of the peace and quiet, potentially. You've got Zechariah and God. Again, just think about the encounter that he had with God through Gabriel and the impact in silence for those 9 months would have had. We see in the way that he prophesies, there's something that obviously is just burnt within him. This recentering, if you will. Think about the people in the surrounding town, the questions they would have had. The ponderance as to what is this leading to? Where is this going? What is it going to play out? All of though, coming back to this reminder of that John is coming to prepare the way for the Messiah. And whereas kind of thinking back to Star Wars, they've had to think on their feet, and it's all been kind of haphazardly happening, if you will. With Jesus, it's not the case at all. God's purpose, God's plan is outworked and seen here through John. And in verse 80, at the end of the passage that I read, it says, "And the child grew and became strong in spirit, and he lived in the wilderness until he appeared publicly to Israel." If you will, it's the end of the passage that says, "To be continued." This is not the end of the story. This is not the bit where you can sign off and go, well, I can't bother to read the rest, really. No, because there's more to come. This is only kind of the beginning, if you will, certainly for John, but a continuing of the ongoing story. And some might look at the Christmas story we read in the Bible and they might say, well, it's just a made-up account, really, isn't it? Some might say, well, it's just another fairy story alongside the Grinch or whatever else kids are told these days, you know. It's just another kind of concoction by the media to try and make a load of money. And it should sit firmly in the fairy tale section of the library or the bookshop. What a totally, utterly misunderstood, missed opportunity that is. And therefore, I want to leave kind of four thoughts with you this morning. As we celebrate Christmas, and however you are going to celebrate the next 2 days, the next week, whether you're on that mountaintop of I'm going to barely sleep for 5 minutes tomorrow night because I'm so excited, or whether actually life is falling apart and you just don't know how you're even going to make it tomorrow night. May you know that I believe this is a story that speaks about God choosing to say, I'm coming for you. I love you. And you're mine. Maybe this morning, you just need to receive that. Maybe for the first time, but maybe just to receive the truth of the Christmas story. And maybe you've sat through endless nativities, and you've been part of church for years, but actually you've never really stopped to go, actually, what is this all about? It's
not just about kids in tea towel and height and fun, but actually this is about God choosing you. Maybe this morning you need to believe it. Maybe you know it very well, but actually, and reality is, you're in that really tough place and you just need to cling on to the truth of what Christmas is about and believe it afresh. Though I don't know how I'm going to make tomorrow night. I don't know how things are going to work out next week or next year. I'm really at the lowest ebb I've been for maybe a long, long time with the things that I'm going through in life. But I am going to choose to believe the fact that God loves me and sent his son for me. Maybe this morning we need to make that decision to share it. Maybe actually we get caught up and excited about Christmas and we celebrate it and we believe it and we recognize what it's all about, but we keep it to ourselves. Maybe we're going to meet family or friends over the next week. Maybe we need to be ready for that opportunity to respond to questions or interject into a conversation. Go, actually, no. This is what it's about. Or this is actually what I believe. This is why I get so excited about it all. Recognizing that it's not a truth to be kept holed up in a box or in a building. It's something for all. Fourthly, maybe it's that response of saying, I want to live it. Another spoiler alert, we're probably going to celebrate Christmas next year. We haven't quite planned it yet here in the church, but I'm pretty certain we'll go through it again. The specific details I'm not quite sure about, but I'm guessing on the 25th of December 2019 we will gather, probably at 10 o'clock, and we'll celebrate. God willing. If I'm here in 12 months' time, I don't want to be celebrating it as I am today, because I want it to have had an impact in my life. I want it to have had an impact that makes a difference, that means that the next 12 months, however I live them out, are not going to be the same as the last 12 months. But I imagine that many of us are going to celebrate Christmas in 2 days' time the same way we did 12 months ago, and the same way we did 12 months before that. And actually, if we're honest, maybe very little has changed. This is the truth of God demonstrating his love for us. The fact that he gave his son for you. Let's not take that as something so blasé and just run-of-the-mill and something that we go through every year. May we allow it to capture our hearts and to transform us. Let me pray. God, I thank you for the truth that is in your word, and I pray that you will help us to receive that truth and to dig into it more fully, Lord. I pray that you will give us that opportunity just to read through again the truth of the story as it's recorded in your word. And I pray that however we find ourselves here today, I pray that you will help us to respond to you. I pray that you'll help us to receive your grace, your love, your hope. Help us to respond to this story. May it transform us. For your glory we ask. Amen.